Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Healthier with Itisham Ahmed. It's been a long time. School and work have kept me occupied, but I'm finally back, and today's episode will be about caffeine. So this is not too controversial of a topic, right? There are people who look on more, you know, the positive effects of coffee, and there's some people who see more so the negative effects of coffee, right? Some people talk about coffee and sleep, right? They talk about how coffee interferes with sleep. Some people talk about the, looking from a fitness perspective. Some people see coffee as an unnecessary intake of calories that can be removed. Some people see coffee as a tool to allow them to focus, right? To give them a little bit of energy during the day. So I'll go through each of these, right? Now it's obvious that coffee is used as, the consumption of coffee allows you to have a little bit more energy, have a little bit more focus, right? And a lot of times, right, I'll talk about this in a little bit more depth later on, but a lot of us also face coffee withdrawals, right? So if we don't drink it, we face the negative effects, but you know, drinking it kind of relieves those negative effects, right? So but that's a little bit different. That's us dealing with our tolerance for coffee, right? So something I found interesting about coffee, right? I've heard throughout my academic career here and there that moderate consumption of coffee is more or less healthy, right? So, but what I found interesting was that coffee consumption, right, can decrease your inflammation in the body, right? In another episode, I talked a little bit more about inflammation. So I'll give like a little bit of summary as to what inflammation does to the body, right? A lot of autoimmune conditions are caused by a lot of inflammation in the body, right? A very common disease that the elderly people have that can be, at the very least, it can be delayed if inflammation is decreased, is atherosclerosis, right? Or plaque buildup in the blood vessels. That can be greatly delayed, right? Or it wouldn't be as bad, right? If our inflammation was decreased, right? So, and how does inflammation happen? Well, it happens from inflammatory foods. It happens as a byproduct of metabolism, right? It happens whether we like it or not. The thing is our body, does our body have the ability to resolve that inflammation, right? And are we taking good care of our bodies? Are we making sure that we're not eating excessive amounts of inflammatory foods, right? So that's a little bit about inflammation. And I talked about some foods that were anti-inflammatory that reduced the body's inflammatory response. I don't know if I mentioned coffee. I know I mentioned green tea, but coffee, right, seems to also have a positive effect on the amount of inflammation in the body. There's this journal. It's titled "Consumption of Coffee or Caffeine and Serum Concentration of Inflammatory Markers: A Systematic Review." Right? It's by Claris Paiva and a bunch of other scientists, and it talks about how consumption of coffee seems to have a positive effect in the inflammatory markers in the blood. In other words, it just decreases inflammation. But what's interesting here is it turns out that caffeine is not responsible for that, right? So it turns out that drinking coffee does help with the inflammation, but caffeine in and of itself doesn't help. So it's not the caffeine part of coffee that helps, right? But it's the other chemicals in the coffee, the other parts of the coffee that actually reduce the inflammatory response. So I found that quite interesting, right? That coffee, it does have caffeine, and that's one benefit you can get from it. But coffee also has the other parts that seem to be good for you, right? So that's quite interesting. Another journal here, coffee consumption modulates inflammatory processes in an individual fashion. That's the title. It's by Besnik Mukaku And this one's relatively recent. It was released in 2016. And this one also talks about how I believe, does it say caffeine or does it say coffee? Predictor parameter demonstrate coffee consumption. Yeah, so it turns out, yeah, so this also talks about coffee. It doesn't talk about caffeine, right? So like they would control this, I guess, with caffeine pills, but this talks about coffee consumption, right? So this includes the caffeine that comes in coffee along with the other chemicals. So this journal also talks about coffee consumption having a significant effect on significant anti-inflammatory effects on the body. Right? So I found this quite interesting that it is healthy, right? But in what way is it healthy? And I'm a huge fan of, understanding inflammation. I strongly believe that a lot of diseases, including autoimmune conditions, right, can be seriously taken into remission, right? I'm not sure if that's the medically accurate word for it, but what I mean to say is, like, I believe that a lot of autoimmune condition can be, the symptoms could be less severe if we manage our inflammation correctly, right? A good friend of mine, he did an I know this is not strong concrete data, but just as, I'm just providing some anecdotes. A good friend of mine, he tried doing the keto diet, right? Along with the keto diet, he made sure that he wasn't consuming any inflammatory foods. And his autoimmune condition that he had, that he has, completely almost disappeared, right? They don't even flare up anymore. So I found that quite interesting as well. I haven't tried this myself, but it seems like the data seems to support it, right? Now, aside from coffee, right? There's also green tea, right? And also, interestingly enough, black tea, right? So it turns out we know green tea, right? What's the word for green tea? I forgot. Matcha, right? Matcha. So matcha is very infamous for being healthy, right? Everyone who drinks matcha swears by its healthy effects, and it's true, right? Green tea does seem to have a significant anti-inflammatory effect, and this comes from the actual tea leaves, right? So with matcha, right, you don't really dissolve the you don't really, like, extract the tea from the leaves. You literally grind up the tea and you're consuming the actual leaf, right? You grind up the tea leaf and you're consuming the actual leaf. You're consuming the ground leaf. But with the black tea, I believe that it's diffused out of the leaf, right? So in that case, I would assume that green tea, right, would have a larger effect. However, this study that I'm looking at, the title is Evaluation of Anti-Inflammatory Effects of Green Tea and Black Tea, a Comparative In Vitro Study, right? It talks about the effects, the anti-inflammatory effects of both, and it says that the changes are mostly the same, right? That's what it looks like. Well, obviously, it says that more things could be controlled for, and better experimental models need to be made. But so far, according to this data, it seems that there's not much difference in the anti-inflammatory effects of both. But it's pretty interesting that green tea and black tea, right, happens to have a significant anti-inflammatory effect, right? This, by the way, was released in 2012, and one of the scientists who wrote it is Priyanka Chatterjee. So you guys can check this out too for your own curiosity. Another interesting journal I saw. So this is outside the context of inflammation. I think it does mention inflammation, but this is just talking about the general healthy effects of coffee. So this one was released in 2017 by Karen Niebuhr. The title is The Impact of Coffee on Health. And it talked about the fact that moderate consumption of coffee has little to no negative effects, right? And even though there are some cases of coffee, having a negative effect, that is mostly due to other contraindications, right? So that's if somebody has something like diabetes or, you know, liver disease or something like that. Those would be a little bit different, right? Interestingly enough, though, right, it turns out that coffee consumption moderately, right, it could help to prevent chronic diseases like type 2 diabetes and liver disease, the diseases that I just mentioned. It turns out that drinking it beforehand can prevent you from you know, suffering from liver disease and type 2 diabetes. So, but obviously it talks about, so some other contraindications that it mentioned was pregnancy, right? So, obviously consuming high amounts of caffeine during pregnancy seems to have negative side effects. So aside from those, right, the average person, the average healthy individual, right, would face no harmful effects or little to no harmful effects from moderate consumption of coffee, right? I'm just taking a look here. I'm not sure if it defines a moderate consumption of coffee. Oh, it does. 3 to 4 cups, right? So 3 to 4 cups it defines as moderate consumption of coffee. 3 to 4 cups a day, by the way. This would provide you with 300 to 400 milligrams per day of caffeine. Now, I have to be honest, I drink way less than that. 3 to 4 cups seems a little bit too much. I think it means like 3 to 4 cups, like the measurement cups. So this is quite interesting as well, right? That it acts to prevent some quite serious chronic diseases as well. So on the other hand, right, some people say that, okay, what about the addictive effects of caffeine, right? Some people mention the withdrawal of caffeine, right? And I'm not going to lie, I've also experienced it, or at least I think I experienced it. This journal that I'm looking at here kind of dives into that a little bit, right? This is titled, "Is Caffeine Addictive? A Review of the Literature." It's by Sally Satel, and it was released quite a long time ago in 2006, but I think a lot of this stuff is quite relevant. It talks about, so first it defines addiction. Okay, so people have some people say that caffeine is addictive, right? And they don't want to face withdrawals and they don't want to be dependent on coffee, right? We know some people that pay ridiculous amounts of money for coffee. You know, this seems to be some sort of an addiction, right? But this journal says that, you know, the term addiction refers to consuming. So I'll quote it. It quotes, "The term addiction, the common sense use of the term addiction is that regular consumption is irresistible and that it creates problems," right? So this is not the scientific definition, this is the common sense use of it. It mentions that caffeine does not fit into this profile, right? So it doesn't compare to the other addictions we have, you know, narcotic addiction, heroin addiction, cocaine addiction, right? Caffeine seems to do no harm to society or no harm to the individual, right? Obviously, if you don't consume ridiculous amounts, and by when I say ridiculous amounts, I mean ridiculous amounts. Like there has not ever, I think there's one case study of somebody consuming, I forgot the number of cups it was, but it was a very high amount. It's not something that you would drink if you even had a coffee addiction. You would never drink that much. It's quite impossible to drink that much coffee. They did it for the purpose of the study, and only then did they notice some harmful effects. You guys can search that up. I don't have that. I don't know how credible it is either, so I didn't want to include that. I mostly use the PubMed journals, but here it talks about that it does no harm to the individual or society, and the users are not like compelled to use it in the same way they are compelled to use, for example, heroin for people with heroin addiction, right? The withdrawal symptoms of heroin are so severe, right? The withdrawal effects of even drugs like benzodiazepine, right? I think that drug is very, very addictive, and the withdrawal symptoms are like the users feel like they're going to die if they don't take it, right? So this is quite interesting, and coffee doesn't seem to have that same effect. However, some people say that when they stop drinking coffee, let's say you drink coffee every day and then you stop drinking it, that you feel lethargic and you feel a headache and you feel lazy, you feel, you know, you feel out of energy. And I'm not gonna lie, I also feel these things, but according to this review of the literature, it seems that these can be reversed by ingestions of caffeine. And you know, ingesting caffeine in that way, it doesn't basically, it's more of a definition thing, right? It's more of a definition thing. There are parallels, but it turns out that coffee is not some kind of crazy, harmful drug. So we can't really talk about it in the same light. You guys can read a little bit more into this. It's a free journal, so you guys can look a little bit more into this. But the symptoms of sleepiness and lethargy, right, that I mentioned, it turns out that in experimental context, when they tried to experiment these things, it was too inconsistent, and it wasn't giving them good enough evidence to accept that this is something that happens. You know, the withdrawal symptoms is something that happens to people who consume caffeine regularly, right? So this means that if you consume caffeine regularly, the chances of you experiencing withdrawal symptoms is not that high, at least not high enough for them to see evidence in experimental context, right? So you guys can check this out a little bit more to see, like, to look more into it, right? But I've shown you all the good stuff about coffee, right? There's not too many bad things about coffee, but let's look on the other side, right? Let's consider both sides. So there's a sleep scientist, he's a neuroscientist, but he's very interested in sleep, right? The science of sleep. His name is Matthew Walker, right? He's an English scientist. He's quite famous. He released a TED Talk not too long ago. I think it was during the COVID season, the pandemic. He released one. Well, at least that's when I watched it, and it was quite recent then. So anyways, he released it. You guys can look into this. It was a TED Talk that he did, and he talked about how caffeine affects sleep, right? And the conventional wisdom is just don't drink it too late in the day, okay? I'm saying this as I'm saying this at 10:21, and I just finished my cup of coffee like an hour ago. So Matthew Walker said that drinking coffee, right, obviously it puts the caffeine in your system. And he talked about the half-life of caffeine, right? And he said that the half-life of caffeine is quite long. And by the time, even if you drink it like earlier during the afternoon, the caffeine is still in your bloodstream, it's still bioavailable, right? And what that does is it affects your it affects your sleep, right, by preventing you from falling into deep sleep, right? So you'll still fall asleep, but your REM sleep will be affected, right? I think I did an episode on sleep as well, and talked about how REM sleep is you know, that's the restorative sleep. That's the sleep you want, right? And when you have caffeine bioavailable in your bloodstream, it interferes with your REM sleep, right? Now, just adding on to what Matthew Walker said, right? He talked about the bioavailability. But something interesting to consider is that the bioavailability of caffeine is different from person to person, right? So there's another journal. Do I have it here? I think it's the journal I already talked about, The Impact of Coffee on Health. I think it's here. I think it's in the journal I just mentioned, The Impact of Coffee on Health by Karen Niebuhr. She mentions the genetic component, right, of coffee metabolism. And there are some people, maybe you guys might know, like some people... they can drink coffee and they can sleep like an hour later, And then there's some people who drink coffee even in the morning and then they still can't sleep, right? Some people have a hyperactive response to coffee, right? Now I'm one of those people that like I'm not like I mean if I drink coffee past 5 p.m. at that point I can't really sleep, right? I sleep around like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. at that point. But I have cousins, they're both brothers, right? They can drink coffee at night and they'll fall asleep even like an hour later or 2 hours later if they're tired, right? But for me, that's like impossible. I could never pull that off. So with caffeine consumption, right? The bioavailability differs from person to person. These can be affected by genetics. So genetics can alter how fast you metabolize caffeine in your system. And the faster you metabolize it, the faster it's out of your blood, right? The faster you use it up, the faster it's out of your blood. So if it's out of your blood, then you're good. But if it stays in your blood, it can affect your sleep. And as Matthew Walker mentioned, it affects the REM sleep, right? The rapid eye movement of sleep. That's the restorative part of your sleep, and that's quite important. And if let's say you drink coffee and you don't listen to Matthew Walker and your REM sleep keeps getting affected, what are the harmful effects? Well, you'll feel more groggy during the day. You'll feel as if your sleep was not like you didn't get a proper full night's rest. You might notice some cognitive, very slight cognitive impairments, some memory issues, right? It won't be too drastic, but if done enough over time, those effects pile up, right? So that was the that's what Matthew Walker talked about. Now, how do you counteract this, right? How do you apply Matthew Walker's wisdom and still stay healthy while still drinking coffee, right? You have to make an informed decision, right? You have to know who you are. Again, as I mentioned, it differs from person to person. Obviously, it's better to consume it earlier in the day than later in the day, so that your body has enough time to metabolize it and get rid of it. Okay, so that's how I see it. Okay, there's no clear-cut approach or clear-cut protocol for this. There never is in the world of nutrition and health. But that's basically how you counteract, right? What Matthew Walker talked about. Now, talking about coffee and when you should consume it, I'm going to now challenge what I just said by mentioning another neuroscientist. His name is Dr. Huberman, Andrew Huberman, right? So he's a neuroscientist, right? He's a very accomplished neuroscientist from Stanford University. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast, right? It's called the Joe Rogan Experience. In that episode with Andrew Huberman mentioned, he talked about the way coffee works in the brain, right? And he talked about the afternoon crash, right? So some people experience, I personally never experienced this, but because I usually never drink coffee as soon as I wake up, I drink it later. But a lot of people who wake up and as soon as they wake up, they drink coffee. They usually experience an afternoon crash, right? And he mentioned, so he talked about how caffeine works first, and he mentioned the mechanism behind that. So the way caffeine works, it's an adenosine antagonist, right? So he mentions this in the podcast. You guys can watch that podcast if you want to hear from him directly. But caffeine is a adenosine antagonist, right? Antagonist meaning antagonist in the story is usually the bad guy. So caffeine works against antagonist, right? It does the it basically per it fights antagonist, fights the sorry, it fights the adenosine, right? So the adenosine, what it tries to do is it makes you more sleepy, right? So it accumulates throughout the day, and at enough amounts, starts to make you sleepy, right? And what caffeine does, it does the opposite of it. So it blocks the effects of adenosine, right? So usually when you wake up, you have a lot of accumulated adenosine, right? Because adenosine is high while you're sleeping, because you're tired while you're sleeping. But when you wake up, you have quite a lot of adenosine in your right, interacting with your brain. Now, when you drink coffee right as soon as you wake up, all that adenosine that's accumulated, right, in your brain, it does not have an effect on you, but it's still there. It exists, but it's unable to have its effect on you. So while your brain is full of adenosine, you're just not feeling the effects of it yet. Once the caffeine wears off, all that built-up adenosine just hits you, and you experience like a sudden fatigue or sudden lethargy. And that is basically the afternoon crash that happens from the consumption of coffee. So what he said was, his solution to it was, when you wake up, right, hold off drinking coffee for the first hour, first like 60 to 90 minutes, he said. This allows all the adenosine that's built up in your brain to get used up, right, to get metabolized, right? All the interactions between the adenosine and its receptors, they occur and they slowly get used up. And eventually they run out. And then if you consume coffee, you will no longer experience the afternoon crash, right? So this was quite interesting that I didn't know exactly. I knew that coffee keeps you awake, but I didn't know the interaction between caffeine and adenosine. So this was quite interesting. And one of the journals I mentioned earlier, The Impact of Coffee on Health by Karen Niebuhr. It's quite a detailed journal, honestly. And this also talks about adenosine as well, right? And this is quite recent. It was released in 2017, right? So it's recent enough, right? You guys are free to check out all those sources, right? Do your own due diligence, right? Learn about it. Once again, the purpose of this podcast is not to tell you what to do or how to do things. It's just to give you enough information to make an informed decision, right? There's good. There's always two sides of the coin, right? There's good and then there's bad. The world of nutrition and health is never black and white, right? So it's always up to up to people to decide, whoever the person is, practitioner or individual person. It's always for up to them to decide what they think is best in a given situation, right? So that is pretty much it from me today. Take care, and I'll see you at the next episode.